All right, welcome back to episode 67 of the Slide In Podcast. I'm Braden Anderson. That is Kelly Gallup.
Welcome back.
We've got a lot to talk about today, a bunch of random stuff. I'm going to forget a ton of it, I'm sure. But we want to start talking about Bob Davis, who gave you some stuff to throw on the wall behind you.
It's a perfect timing.
Remember, Patriots. You got to talk into the mic and point behind you.
As you all know, a lot of people haven't heard from my Pentagon guys lately. Hope to hear from them soon. I'm sure they're a little busy right now. But behind me...
We can't hear you at all.
Behind me is Bob Davis's... Bob sent to keep in pace with all the cops and Homeland Security and other guys have sent us their stuff. Bob sent me his Bronze Star and his... when I get Republic of Vietnam campaign medal and his name right here. Pretty damn cool, if you ask me. Your Bronze Star. Are you kidding me?
That's really cool. Bob's a great dude.
Oh,
big supporter of the shop.
I mean, it got me all weird when I opened that box. Yeah. I was like, holy shit, that's pretty high cotton.
But, I mean, it's kind of weird for us to talk about this. I know Kelly hates talking about this stuff, but the fact that what we do like genuinely matters to people is... It's not lost on us. Like,
not even a little bit.
When somebody sends something like that, it's really moving.
Dude, I mean, it's really weird. It's hard to comprehend. I mean,
totally.
Just dumb fish guys. But yeah, I mean, but we don't take it lightly. And I just thought, I told everybody I had, that was my new one. But I couldn't remember the name of the other medal. I knew it was a long name. And so I had to call Bob before I hung it and screwed it up.
Yeah.
I knew what the Bronze Star was. That's pretty badass. So anyway, that's new. And then just clean up on aisle one here. I also said I had no idea what that Nyat, whatever it is called. And Johnny calls me and says, oh, you've only had it in the shop for a year. And I still don't know what we looked it up. And I may have been wrong. Somebody corrected me on the whole Fincoon thing because then he showed me, he sent pictures of it, and I forgot who it was that sent it. We had to look that guy up, who sent the kind of a description of what Fincoon, and then there's Finnish raccoon, and there was two different ones, but one of them's a crazy-ass looking raccoon thing, but really long legs.
Ragan. Ragan. Ragan Kenyon.
Oh, thank you. Sorry for, listen to the guy just gave you shit about not keeping notes. I have it there somewhere. But thank you for sending that. But we do have, it's a lot like Icelandic sheep, a little thinner. I don't know if that's just a time of year. And it's really, if you're not watching, I'm waving this thing around like a merkin. It's really light. And I'm surprised I haven't used it because I might try it on the sheep herder and see if I can substitute it for some of the synthetics. But anyway, we do have it. It's very cool. Very akin to craft fur and the length. I mean, you can get it, but much thinner, much thinner. This would be spectacular, I would think, pike stuff.
It's like wispy.
Oh, totally.
An accurate word here.
Yeah. And all of it seemed to be. There were some of the white ones I picked up that were a little bit more coarse, but it's super thin. It's super, and I was pulling on it as strong as can be. So I'm guessing it's some sort of sheep or Icelandic type thing with that long, but really cool.
Do you think that's gonna carry much weight in the water?
Zero, I would think. All naturals are going to carry more than synthetics, but it's so fine. And I would guess because it's so fine, it's going to puff out and throw a really big profile.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of embarrassed that I haven't seen it or used it for anything. And especially when Johnny said I've had it here for a year.
Well, you've been busy building a new shop.
Yes. New shop is... We got to put pictures up.
Yeah, I took some photos the other day. I know Chris got some, so we'll throw some in the video for those watching on YouTube.
When you do have you been in since the bracing's come down?
Mm-mm.
Freaking massive.
Really?
It's so,
yeah, I'm
it's a whole new, afternoon. It's a whole new idea of how big it is, but yeah, it's pretty badass. So.
Yes, we've talked about it. We think it's going to be the largest fly shop in the world when it's done.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Which was fun to like ask all the reps and do a bunch of research trying to figure out how big all these shops were.
I think we found one that was 76. We're just shy at 10,000.
Whoa.
But I've been fly fishing for a long time, long enough to see all kinds of trends and fads and new companies come and go. It takes a lot to impress me nowadays. So when Squalla came along a few years ago, making waders and jackets and other stuff, I didn't really think much of it. But eventually, I tried a pair of their RS waders, and I was blown away. Generally surprised at how much better they were than any other waders I've ever worn. Extremely comfortable, durable, well thought out, just everything you could want in a pair of waders. Since then, I've used a bunch of their other gear, and honestly, it's all great. They're a local company, Montana company, run by a bunch of serious fish heads who know what they're doing. So when you're looking at for great, you know, really good fly fishing gear that you know is made by somebody that fishes and their apparel that works as advertised, I'd highly recommend checking out Squalla. We carry a full line at the shop. You can also find them online at squallafishing.com. The fact that we brought in 6,000 new patterns, 42 new bins.
Yeah.
We already had a bajillion flies.
Right.
To have six, that's just patterns, not sizes.
Yeah.
It's going to be obscene.
Yeah, I was at Yellow Dog yesterday getting flies for my upcoming Cuba trip. And
you're going to get abducted.
I know.
I can't wait.
I can't wait either. Life is cruel. Take me away. That's a joke for all of our listeners. I was chatting with, like, you know, Kurt Kruger and Brian Gregson and Casey from up there. I ran into a listener named Mike. Shout out Mike from Colorado. It's nice to meet you yesterday. But yeah, I was telling those guys about the new shop because they keep driving by it going, woof.
Yeah, it's something.
Yeah, Kurt was talking about, you know, setting up the Sage wall.
Yeah.
Dude, we're going to have a big Hardy wall. I mean, it's going to be pretty impressive stuff. So I can't wait to see it. And then we're planning a big grand opening party for it. It's going to be sometime in late August. Is that what we're thinking?
Maybe September. There's a bunch of other events going, but I'm thinking it's going to be a week long.
Okay.
So the crescendo will be that one night where we have the bands and all that kind of shit. But, you know, the world team's here, you know, world championships are here that time of year. Foundation, Wretched Mess, everybody, you know, Madison Rivers Foundation's thing, Wretched Mess.
Everybody's got to have a festival these days.
So we'll do one too, but it was still yet to be solidified. I mean, as far as I wanted to have some serious tires come in and different casters and different stuff for a week long thing. I've always, you know, you go to these things and you pack so much shit into it. I always thought if we could do it for a week and have like two things a day max.
Right.
When you're in Montana, you want to fish.
Yeah.
I mean, when the foundation.
Nobody's coming out here on a vacation to just sit in a fly shop.
Yeah, no.
Actually.
There are a couple people who do that. Yeah, they would for a while. But, you know, use it for what it's for. You know, if you want to see whomever tie, you take 3 hours your day away, but you fish the rest of it.
Right.
You know, and if fishing's really good, you miss it.
Yeah.
So you do what you're supposed to do.
That's what I did. But when I went over to the Spey Festival in the Clearwater.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what it was called. It's the Red Shed and
is
it House of Fly? Somebody else puts it on. Spayclave? I can't even remember the name now. But I drove
The OG one.
Yeah, I drove all the way over there to go to it. And then that morning I hooked, fought, and lost two fish. It's like, I'm not. I got to go through this run a third time.
You do what you're supposed
There's
to.
There's no way I'm driving 45 minutes back up to
Orofino
to go sit in a park. Like, I'm in them right now.
That's what I wanted to have. Like, when we were originally going to do it, when COVID kicked our ass and we couldn't do it, but we were going to have 10 speakers for a week here.
Yeah.
And we would do a morning session and an afternoon session.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all on something different, obviously.
Right.
Right. And so you're here for a week, you get to go to the park, you get everything you want to do, and then you get to see Davey McPhail, or you get to see Charlie Craven, or superstar cat that's there, Richie Strollis I had on board, and a bunch of guys. And then, you know, go play.
Right.
So we'll see. And then that big night, when we opened that shop, I can't remember now how many, it was something like we did, that was about a 5 hour deal, six maybe. I think we did 180 brats and 100 hamburgers.
Wait, was this 2 years ago when we were down there?
Three,
yeah, yeah.
And we did our grand opening for that one.
That was a hoot.
What a, and the casting competitions and all
I couldn't believe how many people came through the door that day.
It was frightening.
Yeah, it was so
fun.
I mean,
it was hundreds.
And then it ended up being like, what, 25 of us after we shut the shop down and we're just slamming beers out back and, yeah. and throwing rods as far as we can.
Things get a little hazy.
Get a little, yeah, things got a little hazy that evening.
It was a hoot nanny though.
The funnest was, you remember the video we shot in the shop the next morning?
Yes.
We forgot to announce the raffle winner. We got so wasted. We forgot to announce that. So we filmed a video and like, I forgot to plug the audio into the camera. We were an absolute wreck.
It was really a party. It wasn't. That's what it was supposed to be.
So yeah. It was
a
good time.
This one will top that one.
I'm sure it'll be a hoot. So keep your calendars open. We're going to announce.
It will be somewhere. I think because of the wretched mess, I think that's the following week. The World Show is the 14th, and Wretched is the 12th, so they're cut. So it might be the week before that.
Your audio is cutting out just a tiny.
That's because I'm looking away.
Yeah, sorry.
Freaking thing. Yeah. So anyway.
All right. Well, let's jump into some comments then, or some questions, comments.
Oh, wait. I got one more thing.
Oh, yeah. What you got?
Jean Paul Boucher, I think is how you say his name, B-O-U-C-H-E-R, says, I watch your show whenever I can. Your interest in Mr. Fields, who has trip a field, telling me I should read Bates' books, which I've had all my life.
Thanks
have
for
read,
that tip.
Thanks, but it was, no, it was cool. I mean, I dig it. Like I said during that thing, it kind of sounded like I was trying to get under my skin a little.
Yeah.
But it didn't a little bit. I mean, he just made me go pick up books and look at them again, which was... That's great with me.
By the way, that is one of my favorite Kelly Gallupisms is like, you know, and if we're going down the river, I'm like, hey, there's a good bucket on the left. You'll turn around and look at me and go, thanks for the tip.
But he says, where was it? He just said, Mr. Fields was an eye opening about Joe Bates and the importance of stream fishing. I think your audience will grow, especially back east. There's a book I strongly... By the way, every time one of you writes in and tells me this shit, I buy the damn book. That one's $125. They only made 1,000 of them. I got a first edition.
Wow.
I don't know. I don't think there's only one edition, but it was 1,000. It was very, very Eastern, which I am from the East. So a lot of people say something like, well, back East, it's kind of where I'm from. Well,
right.
I think Michigan's, I'd say we're East, but most people call us Midwest. I understand it's a big chunk.
Are you anyway, Eastern time zone?
Yes. Yeah. No.
All right. You're Midwest.
So there's a book I strongly suggest you look into. It's Austin S. Hogan, Fly Tire and First Curator of the American Museum of Fly Fishing. That is actually the title of the book. That's a lengthy title. says the book has many early patterns, especially streamers, some science and photos and many patterns Mr. Bates mentioned many times in the book. And so then he asked me if I've ever tied a Von Hoff Parmachine bow. I think that's Bell, but I don't know. Anyway,
Have you ever tied one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
you've talked about
know.
It before.
I mean, when I was a child, I tied them, but you know, it's a really bright fly. A lot of those flies, and when I was doing it, we tied like size sixes.
Yeah.
They were really big wet flies. My dad was loved to swing those things, right? And so, but did very little of it. I mean, things progressed so quickly in the 70s, you know, late 60s and 70s that he kind of kept up with that. But anyway, he said another thing. He said, you asked about Granny Grandstrom. And by the way, I said when I read the book, I didn't know anything about him, right? But then I looked him up and found out who he was. And
yeah, but then you read the book.
Yeah, but I read the book.
You learned about him.
Well, I didn't read about him. Oh. Just he's in Joe Brooks' 72 book.
Gotcha.
Right? And I just was enamored with his ability. If I could be anybody fly time wise, it would be Granny Grant. His style, I think I emulated my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
Like we were talking on the last one, they're not tight. Nothing was really tight like it is now. And it was just a flow. It's just the beauty of his, they just had so much style. But I didn't not know about him. I just didn't. But, and this, and then Paul, or Jean Paul says, his address was in the book, which I knew. But he said, Granny Grandstorm was best friends with Joe Brooks. I had no idea about this. And they fished together on the Oregon coast. Both were for both trout and stripers. And he says, Mr. Brooks got many striper records, probably while fishing with them. So, which is really cool. And so, by the way, I bought the book and I can't wait to see it. There's only one picture that showed anything to do with the book. It's a really elegant book. Mm. You know, it says 1,000 issued. But I did get that book, and the one plate, I blew it up and stared at it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like, oh God, yes. I hope there's not more books like this because
Kelly's going to go broke.
Oh God. Every time this happens, I go down that. Whoever wrote me about getting the bass book, the guy about when we were talking about the waves, wavelengths.
Right.
That book on a shit edition was $250 and I couldn't get it. I still haven't got one yet. I ordered one. I didn't get it. Evidently, I was on sort of freaking like a bidding thing or some shit. You just put a bid on? Well, yeah, I thought so. I thought I got it, but yeah. I didn't. Huh. Well, I haven't got it if I did, but that's not uncommon. At least I wasn't drunk when I did it. Didn't buy a horse. Oops.
That's online bidding for horse auctions.
That was stupid.
That's a dangerous
game. That wasn't really smart, but shit horse too.
Yeah, didn't you get that horse and then it immediately just refused to run or something?
No. She had cow kick. She was just kicking all over and she's crazy. And then she had a baby, which was beautiful. That's the greatest filly ever. Mel's got her dialed in. But that was not good.
You had the baby during streamer school, right?
Yeah, third session.
Yeah, what did October 18th. Didn't somebody walk over and say, hey, Swanson, you got blue shit coming out of your horse?
No, Swanson, the dumbass, who's a horse head.
Swanee?
Yeah. He walks down. We're all walking up at break, and he says, hey, fat ass, your horse is having a baby or some shit. And I go, what the hell is that supposed to mean, dumbass? He goes, I don't know. It's got a bunch of blue shit hanging out her ass. I go, that's her placenta. I mean, we all run out.
Yeah.
It was really great because John was there and Scott, and he's a vet.
Yeah.
But he didn't tell me that. He just told everybody to shut up. He's told me to tell them to shut up or leave. And then his buddy said, yeah, I think you should listen to him. He's a vet, a horse vet.
Yeah. What are the odds?
I don't know, but takes a lot of pressure off. Well, I mean, it was like,
yeah,
I mean, sure. It was looking good. I mean, her nose is up and her feet were down and sticking out. And I'm like, that's about the extent of my knowledge.
Yeah, that's
good.
Theoretically.
And it should come out, right? Yeah. But to have a vet there, that's pretty cool. So, yeah.
What are the odds that in a group of, how many people go to streamer school? Is it eight?
Yeah.
Yeah. What are the odds that of the eight people at streamer school, one's a horse vet?
Yeah, exactly. And what are the odds that it was 63 degrees with a light wind and it was the perfect night? It had been sub-zero for every night. I'd go out and look for that horse, going to finish you up. And it all worked out. And Mel got there right as it was standing up. She must have been doing like 100 the whole way. That's pretty cool.
That's okay. Life finds a way.
This episode is brought to you by Hardy. Founded in 1872 in Alnwick, England, Hardy is one of the most respected names in fly fishing. They spent over a century doing things properly. Hardy rods and reels are built with a deep respect for craft and tradition. There's a quiet confidence to their gear, clean lines, purposeful designs, and performance that doesn't need explaining. This is equipment made by people who understand that fly fishing is as much about feel and restraint as it is about power. When you fish Hardy, you're fishing a lineage that stretches back generations, refined over time, shaped by rivers, and trusted by anglers who care deeply about quality. If you're drawn to gear with real heritage, thoughtful craftsmanship, and unmistakable British roots, take a look at Hardy. Some things are worth doing the right way.
All right, let's jump into some questions. This one is actually a comment from Patrick111 on YouTube. He said, the new audio quality is like sex, but for ears. Thanks.
It's not like sex for my, well, sometimes it's like sex for my back. This bending over, and it does, I did watch a little of it. It's like, well, kind of is. Looking at this mic, this would be a.
Don't let the cobra bite you.
Yeah, I listen to it. I have a hard time. Mel likes to watch them, and I don't like it. So I did. It does keep me from fidgeting quite as much as I normally do.
We're working on the staying in front of the mic. That was a helpful tip from, I can't remember his name, but he offered to help me.
He just told me. He just read his name a minute ago to me. Tell me his name.
No, that was somebody else, I think.
It is. It does keep you directed, but it's. I mean, I sat and watched probably, I don't know, Expendables 50 or something for one of those, And I sat there and I just paid attention how often I do this. I must fidget like that every 15 seconds. To sit there for 30, 40 seconds without moving, yeah. It's got to be like a, you know, John Wick about to kill somebody.
Right. Yes.
There's something going on.
Okay. Really, another follow-up I had to correct, which I'm embarrassed about this one, but when we had Chris on, we forgot to do Band of the Week. And the next week, I tried to get his Band of the Week in here, which was Kingfish, which is a Bob Weir band, and Bob Weir had just passed away. But me and my endless ineptitude was unaware of that. And when Chris texted me about Kingfish, I looked up Kingfisher, and I found a band that I thought Chris was listening to, so I started listening to him. And yesterday, Chris and I connected the dots that they have 7 monthly listeners on Spotify. So I am one of the 7 largest fans in the world of this band, Kingfisher. I know nothing about them, but I kind of like their music. They had a couple good songs. So check out Kingfish for Chris and check out Kingfisher for me if you like. It's not my favorite music, but I liked it. It was sunny out yesterday. I swung the Yellowstone with Parker. And as I was driving back to Bozeman, I had my windows down and was listening to Kingfisher, and all was right in the world for but a moment.
One moment.
All right. I cannot find the comment from this guy, but thank you for offering help with the audio. And we are working on getting used to talking directly into these things and facing them. And it's whatever, a constant work in progress, but we appreciate your patience. And I'm glad that at least for one person, the new mics were like sex for his ears.
Didn't the one guy say you're supposed to be like 2 inches from that?
Yeah. Yeah. That's
oof-ta.
Yeah. See how I'm like, ooh, eating the thing right now?
Yeah, but I just lean back. It makes my back hurt to sit here like this, slump-shouldered over like some sort of...
Yeah, we got to work on... I think we need some new mic stands. It's just never...
Yeah, those things aren't pretty cool.
Yeah.
They're like, they want to tip over kind
of
something.
Yeah, they're not great. And then one of our...
I get the directional thing about it. But, you know, we'll figure it out.
One of our guys who comments a lot, I think he's trolling us like half the time. No Photo Mojo. He cool. said, why do you need the fancy new equipment?
Does everybody...
Dude.
We didn't.
I'll kill you. all right.
Because it's better.
Yeah, it's better. It's better. Something we should have
done. Because we got a lot of shit for the shit audio.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, our audio is bad. Yeah. It's better now. It's not perfect. Yeah. I'm still figuring out how to use this.
Yeah, you're in a little meltdown this morning.
Yeah, I cried a lot in here. All right, we're going to go to a question from my father, Mark. I saw my dad in Idaho, and he loves nymphing. We're different in some ways. And he was asking about the drop shot rig, because we talked a little bit about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was curious if you could kind of just run through at a high level what the drop shot rig should look like, and then... Let me get, I'm waffling right now because I'm trying to find his text. Here it is. He said, okay, so no weighted flies necessary with drop shot. Is that correct? Or maybe just small beads would be a great episode. Benefits and methods for drop shot nymphing. So what is it? I guess let's do a couple things. Let's explain the drop shot rig, and then let's talk about kind of the pros and cons of the drop shot compared to traditional split shot placement on a bobber rig.
Okay.
Which I guess maybe to define that, I would consider traditional split shot placement on a bobber rig to be above your flies.
I think originally it was, well, one shot above a fly, and then the tandem fly started becoming popular. I would say most people go shot, fly, fly.
Yeah. That's how I was, I guess how I learned a nymph.
Yeah. It is probably the, as far as lack of tangle, lack of, I mean, just throwing it out. And, you know, originally there was no bobber, then it's bobber. I don't like that system. I've always questioned everything in fishing. Mm-hmm. Because so many things in fishing start out one way And it's that way no matter what until somebody says, well, what about this way, right? For everything, for all types of fishing. Gear, I mean, everybody knows I love bass shows and a lot of the history. I love the cast, the show they do about how people develop Roland Martin and depths and different things. And there's just all kinds of people that had these things to do with changing the world. But I just want to address one or two things about nymph fishing, which Euro trash nymphing has changed the world, right? And it is so effective. But what in... It's tight line, right? It is, and it's critical that it's that way because if you were to throw it out like you did a bobber and wait, it would suck. Mm-hmm. The fact that when you're Euro fishing, you keep two flies in two zones. That's the most critical thing to me about nymph fishing because it's back in the day when as nymph fishing was progressing, it was going, you got the flies low, everything was low. But if you started where I did with it in the generation of that of matching the hatch and following the hatch and the emergence or the pupation or whichever you're in, caddis or mayfly or midge or whatever you're doing, it became very critical that you understood that the fly starts somewhere and ends somewhere. Mm-hmm. It starts on the bottom and it goes through a process to get to the surface, whether it's a emergent swimming or a pupation. It doesn't matter. The fact is you're supposed to understand the thing doesn't start one place and just pop to the surface. Like there's a process.
Right.
That process could take hours. It can take minutes. It doesn't, I mean, the actual emergence depends on what kind of fly it is. Does it swim quickly? Regardless of what that is, it is a process. Mm-hmm. And so theoretically, if you're worth a shit, you follow that process. That's why dumbing down a bobber, everybody says, oh, it's just throwing a bobber, right? Well, to a degree, you're right. But to another degree, do you understand why I have two flies in the water? Mm-hmm. And do you understand that, like when we always did shot, and but remember, when we say always, most of us are boat guides, right? You can get an endless drift and change things with a split shot fly. And in particular, if you understand how flies work, you can go for a long ways. If you're a weight angler, you don't have that option. I mean, you got a very short window of opportunity. So the first thing that you understand—
quick, how long should the average drift be for a weight angler? Just roughly. This is, you know, obviously it's very dependent on the run you're in.
Not really. The water. Not as a nymph angler. Well, if you're bobber fishing, you can get away. You can fish a lot longer, but even so, 20 feet of actual, that's a long one.
That's a long one.
That's like standing on a rock and get high stick and something.
Great line control.
Yeah, you're above it. You can hold it up without interfering with your drift. A lot of things, but I would say more like, I suggest people do about 6 to 8. Because you got your drop zone where your flies are just getting down there, and then you really super control 6 feet of your cast. Mm-hmm. And then you lift it at the back on purpose to emulate your emergence, you know. But when you look at, so the first thing I understand is your fly design, if you think back way back like 15, 20, 30, 20 years ago, people started using foam and you would see they were doing it for a reason. They're getting mm-hmm. flies that didn't sink. See, that's the problem, is that if you're everything, like I never understood the bead head, right, ever. First of all, nothing's got a freaking gold helmet on. And second, flies don't go down. They only go up,
right?
Actual flies, the insects. Insects emerge, they go up. And they are seldom, if they're trapped in the water column and they're loose for whatever reason, they get dislodged for whatever reason, they're meat. They're toast. They're getting chewed. And so you're trying to emulate the emergence of everything. I don't care if it's a midge, a crane fly, any mayfly, any caddis, they start in the bottom, go up. So if you were good in the old days, I like to put my shot in the middle and I would put a fly above it. So the shot, anything below the shot is going to be pretty close to bottom if you're doing it right, because that's where you're intending it to be, right? Then I put the shot in the middle and put a dropper off that. So I'm in now two water stratas. I am not fishing the same zone with two different types of flies. So right. you've got to, if you want to run a bead head, I would tell people put it low. It's going to help. It's going to go lower. But you've already got the split shot. I'm pretty anti-bead. Always was.
Yeah.
I don't, they don't, like they're dropping. Nothing, they don't, flies don't drop. Insects don't drop in the water. It's, they can swim. There's no, but you're following emergence. You're nymph fishing for a reason. Nymphs aren't just swimming around out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's natural selection. The ones who go down get eaten.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And then, well, I mean, and then they don't really, until they're ready to emerge, you've got biological drift where they float and change zones, but they don't usually, it's just not natural to have them, in, you know, going dropping in front.
Right.
And then like when you, with Euro nymphs, both those flies are dropping instantly, right? They are just like, shh. That's why they're so successful.
Right.
They go down to the zone that you're fishing, right? You can have one very close to the bottom. That's what makes the difference between Howards and Lances and the other guys. You know, Egan, all these guys that are so superstar guys, and George and all those guys, they know exactly how long it takes to get down. Then they hold that fly in exactly those two zones.
It's just maximum time in zone, right?
Exactly. And it doesn't have to be the exact bug, but it's where the bug belongs. That's why you've got two or three flies on there. And so you would find those. And then this, I'm sure the great guys dial it in a little more than just, you know, they have a fly above that looks different than the fly below for a reason.
Yeah.
Right. And so if you're, so then, but he's talking about drop shot, but it's the same premise. So drop shot comes along, which I didn't invent. Nobody invented it. The bass anglers have been doing this, and the walleye have been doing this thing for 60 freaking years.
Yep.
And that's where I came up with it. I saw a guy drop shotting bass. And I thought, well, shit, I could, because before that,
we do that,
before that I did a right angle system. It was really close to that, where it's a tight short leader butt section to your yarn. And then just tied off to that straight down.
Yep.
And I did flies like that, fly, bead, bead. And so, or fly, you know, shot, fly, fly. And you could,
so it's basically drop shotting with an
indicator. It's basically Euro nymphing with an indicator.
Yeah.
You've got a really short leader and you got a short butt section, and you've got whatever it is you need to be to get down there, 5 feet a leader, straight down though.
Yeah.
Right. And then you got an indicator. Drop shotting is just a different way. You're not using that right angle system. Yeah. You're actually using a regular leader and tight line.
So you just, so, it's essentially you're taking out the indicator. Is that the material?
Taking out the indicator and taking out the Euros and putting the, and so I can use, and the reason I like it better, it is more tangly. You get more screw ups. You get, yeah.
I think that's the important con to know.
Yeah. That's the big one. You got to be used to tying knots, but I'm allowed to fish flies that are not weighted because my lead take, my, and how you set it up, which it depends on where you want it, but let's just start at the bottom. You got very bottom, you got a split shot. And then 6 inches above that, you got a dropper loop to your first fly. And then 14 to 16 inches above that, you've got another one.
So
you're fishing two lines, you tight line it, the lead's on the bottom, and the flies are in two different columns. And so, you Euro it, you tight line it right through the rod.
To clarify, I'm curious if you do this, and I learned this from somebody, possibly you. Keep in mind, I like rarely nymph, but I know how to set these rigs up. Mm-hmm. And I have done them a lot in the past. I actually went out and nymphed with Jake, posted a stupid photo on Instagram of a big brown I snagged in the fin, but nice. I admitted to snagging it. So I thought it was funny. So when I set up drop shot rigs, I run a lighter tippet to my lead than I do to my flies.
Yeah, that was just theoretically so you would... It would get caught and you'd break that off.
Break the lead off instead of your flies. Do you do that?
No.
No.
And I don't even put a knot in the end of it anymore. I don't give a shit if it falls off. I just put another one on. And that if it's going to, that's where it's at.
I would recommend for the amateur angler to put a knot in the bottom because you're probably not as in tune.
If I'm on 5, usually I'm on 5X for that dropper thing.
Yeah.
For my lead. And unless it's like soon here when I'm throwing crane flies all day and they're bigger.
And you go 4X, 3X.
Might go 4X because I just don't want to deal with anything because
right.
it's so fast. And it's, yeah, that's a good idea. And I also changed, I don't even do the dropper loop anymore for this lead. I tie, so how I do it now is I tie my point fly on, just like you would any fly.
Okay.
And then 16, whatever inches you like above it, depending on the speed. How the faster the water is, the longer the distance, because you're not, you can't hold your flies up as well.
Right.
And they get more of an angle as they're going past you. So they're, you're trying to keep them a certain distance apart. And theoretically, the reason you do that is that you are trying to establish that the fish are all on the bottom. You know, are they, have they started to move? Have they started? Yeah. So you're out there and you've got all your flies on the bottom. If you're doing traditional lead fly fly and all your flies are on the bottom and those fish move up 10 inches in the water column, you stop catching fish. They're still there. Mm-hmm. You just, you're below them now. And so, but I don't do that. I do, I tie the fly, the point fly, by the, if you don't know what a point means, it's the furthest thing. It's like the point of the arrow, the spear, whatever. It's the furthest thing away from you. So I go tie my fly on 16 inches above that. I do a blood knot, a dropper loop above it. And so that's my second fly.
And so
that fly is going to be different color, different shape, different everything. It's intended to look like it's leaving the, it's emerging.
And the dropper loop, just to clarify, do you, you got a perfection loop and then you
I do a perfection loop above a blood knot.
Above a blood knot. And then mm-hmm. you thread the lead end of your tippet through the loop around your main line.
Yeah, you just cinch it down on the main line above your blood knot and it just
hopefully
butts
that makes
in.
Sense. I'll try to draw a diagram and put an image of it in this thing for folks. But it,
we've got those diagrams. So,
yeah.
But they're,
yeah. We've got a ton of videos.
Anyway, there's a... But I started just doing, instead of putting the dropper loop on, I don't know why I did it. I just think I was in a hurry one day. And I just tied a blood knot above my point fly.
Yeah.
And left 6 inches of line off
tag.
It. Yep. Yeah. And it actually, I think, has a better effect. It turns my fly sideways, right? So it's not hanging
kicks
down.
It out better.
It's kind of kicking sideways. I didn't get nearly as many tangles. I don't know why.
Yeah.
It's the same damn thing. You get the tangles usually come from those little piss ant, those six to eight inch fish that just do that psycho wiggle.
Yeah.
And oh God, it's frustrating. So with that way, you know, you can just cut it off and do another one so quick, you're not trying to do a whole new rig.
If you're not good at tying knots, this is not a system for you.
No.
This is a system. You need to be efficient with knots for it to actually pay off. Yeah. And in my experience, I euroed for a little bit and then just kind of grew out of it. When I nymph, I drop shot now. It is my preferred method, but it is more time intensive in terms of setting up. And
I think it's more, well, when Howard and I were fishing up above and you're following Howard, which is not a good feeling, right?
No.
And he's... It's, you know, he's as good a Euro nymper as there is in the world. Hence, he was the world champion.
Literally, he's got a trophy.
Yeah. Yes. He's currently has it.
Yeah.
He owes it to me. so.
Howard, I know you listen.
Yeah. I was just talking to him this morning. Where's my trophy? But at any rate, Euro has its limitations on depth, right? And it's because it's, and every time we'd get up there and they're getting that certain water, he goes, I can't get there.
Yeah, speed of water, right?
Speed of water and the velocity. I mean, it's just humping through that canyon, right? It's just, it's way more volume coming through there. And so the drop shot allows you to do what it takes to get there. Now, understand, you can't do lead in competition fishing.
Right.
So Howard would get there and he would just announce, essentially, he goes, I'm above him.
Yeah.
And he'd fish it until he... Throw as far as you can, do everything you can, doesn't matter. And then throw too far, you're out of control. It's really hard to catch up on that super fast water that's, you know, 4 foot deep. And I would just put on another split shot and fish it how I would always fish it. Like, and that, you know, if it wasn't that, he's crushing it. He's taking every fish out from under me.
So I think that's a pro in terms of the drop shot compared to Euro, just to kind of sum this up, is the malleable nature of the weight of the rig, right? That it's so customizable. Whereas with the Euro, all you have is the weight that is on your flies.
Correct. But I mean,
you can drop shot from a Euro rod.
Without the limitations of super volume and super speed, you can do everything Euro that you can with a drop shot. And you aren't going to lose the shit like we do. You're not going to get tangled, you know, those little tangles on your dropper.
Right.
It's But if all things being equal, I think if you could drop shot in competition, everybody would drop shot.
Yeah.
I don't think you would, because it's so much quicker.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can, I think they can only go to a 3.5 beat. Maybe it's a 4.0. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like they've got some limit.
I think it's 3.5.
Also, but this is a
rant. Somebody, 100 people will write me, but yeah. I mean, I think it's 3.5 because Howard was, I got a bunch of 4.0s with me because I don't do it because he can't.
Right.
He is always practicing.
He's practicing.
Every second of every day.
Makes him great.
And he could tie on a piece of lead if he wanted to catch fish. But he's beyond that. He's just trying to perfect his craft. But I think if you could fish lead in competition, we'd have a whole different world there. I mean, I think a lot of people would do that because of the versatility of the run, just so quick. It's not like it. If it takes you more than 10 seconds to tie a fly, take it off and tie it on, you're probably not in that league anyway.
Right.
So you should be, you know, quick enough to, and most of this river, 3.5 is fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, but even in some of the not massive speed zones, like when we just got down different areas, you just couldn't get there. It's just too deep. Right? Yeah. And you just couldn't, enough volume that just pushing even the...
Yeah, I mean, there's like five holes in this river where Euro can run into that problem.
Yeah.
And the rest of the river is...
It's made for Euro. This is the best, arguably one of the best Euro rivers in the world.
Yeah.
I mean...
I haven't seen all the water in the world, obviously, but of the water I have...
The water Reynolds, just as good as ours looks just like ours.
Yes. Right?
The water in wherever in Europe or Chile or Argentina, wherever you're going... It'll look just like this one. It'll be this depth, this speed, these boulders, you know, not a lot of logs to wreck your life, and it'll just, and super abundant. I mean, it's got so many bugs in it.
Yeah, it's made
if you want to learn to nymph Euro, this is the river to do it. Howard says it all the time. Yeah. You know, this is the best river he's ever fished.
Yeah.
Because it's made to, and I, you know.
It's massively high fish counts.
Yeah,
it's,
everything's right, and the bug counts are right, and the bugs do what they're supposed to. They hatch at the times they're supposed to, and they get in these different zones. That's the critical thing, regardless of which one you do. But your dad was asking about drop shotting, and it's, you know, and you don't have to do, I pre-dress mine. Sometimes I have four different droppers on my leaders.
Yeah.
I just leave them set there. So if they get right on the... Like when the spring, when those betas get up and they're only eating them 1 inch underneath the surface, good luck Euro in that one.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard because you can, but well, it's not that hard. You just got to run one way the hell up and just do it where it belongs. But your flies are always trying to go down. So if you've got a fly that's completely unweighted and is trying to emerge and you can go through the drop shot and hang that up there. But I mean, they can do the same thing Euro. You just tie in a different fly. You know, just put it where it belongs.
So I maybe a caveat of this is rod selection. I've found when I am fishing a rod that's less than 9.5 feet, I tend to run a bobber on this drop shot rig. Something about the reach with a shorter rod to me. I mean, I'm not an expert nympher by any means. In fact, I rarely do it, but I did it for a while. To the point where I was decent. And to me, like having the right stick for, you know, tight lining, Euro nymphing, it was a huge part of it for me because you can actually, you know, there's some equation, like an extra 6 inches of a rod is like another 3 feet of reach or something like that. That's probably overdoing it, but
a little bit.
But there is some Pythagorean A squared, B squared, something.
Sure.
But yeah, the having like the right rod, you know, for a while I nymphed on an 8 foot 4 weight.
Mm-hmm.
Bobber, essential.
Yeah, anything. I like a 10 footer for virtually everything.
Yeah.
But there's a downside because I like, for those of you who don't quite give a shit or care about this,
They stopped listening.
Euro-nymphing is not with fly line. No matter what you call that freaking competition shit, it's still not fly line.
Yep.
I like to fish fly line.
Yeah.
I just do.
Well, when
I don't mind bobbers.
Do
I like bobbers too. So, I mean, I think it's a blast.
Yeah.
But I fish usually a 10 or 10 foot rods, 4 weights. And it does, with The one downside to that is that if you've got any fly line out and there's wind, it's way harder.
You're hosed.
Yeah. Yeah. That's when you just lengthen the shit out of your leader.
Yeah.
Right? You just add.
That's when it helps to have a spool of 20 pound maximum with you. You can just.
Or amnesia build, that, you know, yeah. you can use as a sighter. I mean, you go back in time. I still want somebody to challenge me on this. I think I invented that cider thing 35. I've got a video that's 30 years old and it shows three colors of amnesia.
Yeah.
And cider did not exist back then.
I did it long before you, so.
Good luck. Yeah. I just think the three color thing where we did, because we did that video on nymphing by the numbers and I don't believe there was, well, nymphing, Euro wasn't around then either, but, And then that got shit. That took shit too. Well, you're not, that's just a glorified bobber. Yeah, it is.
Okay. Yeah, whatever.
I like the bobber too.
Great.
I've said it 1,000 times. I love to watch those things bounce around.
Yeah. Okay. So the other day.
I mean, you're nymph fishing. Give it up.
Sunday, I was up here with Jake. We went up and swung for an hour and a half. Had a ball, got a couple fish, which that water's cold right now.
Yeah.
Every fish I got was on a broadside jig. Like either broadside or downstream, you know, throwing a cross current and getting that fly moving. They all rainbows, but they came up and ate it high, which was not what I was expecting.
Pre-spawners.
I thought I was going to be on the dredge. Long story short, after that, it was a little tough up there. We came down here and on the way home stopped to fish the kiddie pool and just put a freaking reckoning on them. I mean, in 45 minutes, I don't know how many fish we hooked, landed, lost a bunch. And Jake and I were talking, and it's just like, I hadn't nymphed in a long time. It's fun to see the bobber go down.
Yeah.
It is. It's super fun. I bag on it all the time because I like the virtue signal that I'm better than you because I don't do it. Not you, the proverbial you. but it is, like, it's fun. I had a nice time doing it. I don't need to do it again right now, but it was really fun. Watching the bobber go down is a good time.
So back to his deal.
Yeah, sorry.
You can bobber it too with a drop shot.
I run bobbers on the drop shot rig a lot.
I don't. I just, well, I have. I just don't like to. But I like to, I don't know. I just always have thought it was funny to watch a bobber go down. I go back home, fish with Jerry. We fish straight up spawn on thill bobbers.
Yeah.
With level lines. I just think it's fun as shit. I mean, every fish we hook's right dead in the end of the nose. Everybody's, oh, you guys kill all them fish. So I kill a lot more when I'm swinging than I do. I mean, they eat that thing. I get them right in the beak. But it's just, everybody has their own opinion. I don't give a shit what they think. Everybody has it. Who cares what you think or I think? If you don't like bobber, don't fish the goddamn thing. But if you like, you know, if you like to, I think, the most efficient nymph system in the world is drop shot.
Yeah.
I truly do. And now, I think if you could.
You guys drop shot with fly line or drop shot with like a Euro line?
Well, by the time I use pretty much a Euro leader and always have.
Yeah.
And I go to, when I used to do seminars about it, I called it naked nymphing. Mm-hmm. Basically getting rid of the bobber, right? And so you're just out there, but you've got, I don't know how long ago. Well, it can't be more than, it's about 25 years ago we shot, Gene and I shot Nymphing by the Numbers. And it was in the original shop, the first year I think I was here. And so, and we just showed, you know, three different, it's two colors of mono. We used amnesia because we did in the Great Lakes, we've been fishing amnesia or gold strand, which I use gold strand more than I use amnesia. We used it back in the 70s, right, where you're tight lining. Joe Humphreys did a video, or one of the first fishing videos ever, not videos, TV shows, he shot up on the rock wall.
Yeah.
Back in the, I think, 72, using straight amnesia. Well, that pissed everybody off, right? If Joe wasn't such a badass,
he'd be running out of, fishing.
Yeah, there's always that thing, you're not fly fishing. Well, whatever, okay, silk used to sink. So, I mean, it's, I don't even want to go down that thing, I don't give a shit. I just think it's a super efficient way to learn to nymph fish. And you're going to gradually go over to Euro anyway.
Right.
If you're going to get into that, you're going to end up Euro nymphing.
Yeah.
And especially on this river.
Yeah.
But that's the gist of it is that you want to have two flies in different zones.
Right.
You know, you want one on the bottom, one on the top, and you want to be the one dictating that. Yeah. Rather it's by your hold, like where you're holding your flies in the water, if you're Euro, or if you want to do it by, the thing about Euro or the thing about drop shotting is you're always in contact with the bottom. That's the key. You touch bottom every time and you adjust your flies for the height of the, where the insects are accordingly, but your lead always touches the bottom.
Right.
Every single cast, if you don't touch, you're guessing.
Yeah.
And when you get really,
that means add more weight.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And when you get really good at it, just like a Euro, you'll know that you may touch once in that whole run.
Yeah.
But you know your fly 6 inches off the bottom where the fish's face is at.
Yeah, it's essentially just sliding bottom the whole time.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And so I dig that, whether you like it or not, it's learning another style, right? Yeah. And when you're really good at it, you can adapt, you'll come up with something else. Mm-hmm. Or you'll find a way to adapt the next system you use where you don't, maybe I don't use it like that. Maybe you do a 4-0 bead and you go to Euro and it's just like, okay, but I get the concept. The idea is that the flies are in a zone for a reason.
Yep.
And then you figure that out.
It's essentially all about intentionality, right? Like, I guess all of fly fishing is, life should be. But yeah, it's being intentional with where your flies are, being intentional with your weight changes.
Yeah.
Being intentional with all of
it. That's fishing.
Yeah.
That's the difference between
hoping and hunting.
Yeah. Right?
Yes.
It's the difference between everything.
Having a reason. My good friend Connor, we were laughing about it. I saw him in Sun Valley last week and he does this great thing. And Connor, if you're listening, I love you, dude. But he will.
Are you going to trash your buddy right now?
Of course. No, it's not really a trashing thing. It's like he will come to a conclusion first and then come up with any rationale possible to support it, which is like it leads to unbelievable confidence. Connor's an incredibly confident man. He's very good at his job. He's a AI engineer. He sold his company to another company. I mean, he's doing great. But you know, the example of this was he started buying Zins on his company card. Sorry, Connor, if you get fired for this, I hope your CEO doesn't listen. And we're like, dude, that seems kind of risky, huh? And he goes, well, my CEO's best friend bought Zins for his entire office as, you know, it's like coffee to him, right? It's an efficiency thing. So I just figured it'd be fine if I bought him on my card. I was like, all right, well, you came to this conclusion that you wanted to buy Zins on the company card and then crafted a story to support it. Sure. I like the confidence. We got a good laugh out of it. But yeah, that's just fishing is all about intentionality. And
I've been doing it wrong my whole life, I guess.
What? Trying to.
Yeah.
Yeah. He does it backwards of the typical style.
Hundreds of hours of diving in rivers and watching bugs and crayfish. I could have just said, I think they do this.
Yeah.
And then go with it.
I think they want to eat big flies.
I'm going to just go with this.
Hey, there's two ways to get there, and one's a hell of a lot quicker than the other.
Yeah, and a lot less shrinkage.
All right, let's jump into something else. I think, did we wear that out?
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. For drop shot.
All right, I was up at Bridger Bowl the other day. Long story, can't ski right now, can't drink right now. But I ran up there to go hang out with some buddies. Who were at the Grizz, which, Kelly, if you don't know this, everybody always says that their last run at Bridger Bowl is doing the Grizzly Ridge, which is just the name of the bar.
Got it.
Yeah. So we were sitting outside and I happened to
did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah. I happened to be sitting next to a gentleman who commented on this Squala 3-2 Puffy, which, by the way, when I called Rich to tell him how great this jacket was, I couldn't get 3-2 right. I was like, the 150% Puffy, it's the... I couldn't get it right. He's like, 3-2. All right, got it. Great coat. And he commented, you know, asking about it. We got to chatting about fishing. And, you know, I told him I work for you. And he goes, oh, you know, Kelly fishes the White River a lot, right? And I was like, well, he spent a ton of time down there. And he said he is going... This is Aaron, by the way, the guy I was sitting next to. He is going down to the White River for his buddy.
That's where this is going.
His buddy Sam Nelson is getting married, and his bachelor party is going fishing on the White River, which that's a great bachelor party. And he asked me to ask you for 3 flies for the White River.
I thought you were just getting them to take. I didn't know that there was a going to be this whole buildup. So I just got three flies. I got four, of course.
But. Yeah. So Kelly picked out some flies. I thought it might be entertaining to talk about the flies you chose and fishing the White River a little bit.
Well, I'd spent decades down there, but I haven't been down for quite a while. Time of year is what I was looking at. So, you know, spring, you know, the rainbows are spawning up high, which is kind of a pain, but does get them out of the lower zone. So you're not catching them. You don't catch that many there anymore. But my single best day ever there in the spring was on a shad kill. But they weren't really, the shad didn't really show up much. Mm-hmm. And so I put in a heifer groomer because I had a 4 heifer groomer on. I fished a dry line all day. The number was obscene. Like, I don't even know. It was high 20s over 22 or 24. It was just every fish in the ditch ate
it. A bunch of giant fish.
Absolutely stupid. Best day I've ever had, period, down there. And it was, but there were no shad. They showed up for about, they get pushed down, but there weren't that many. Mm-hmm. But every fish somehow knew that they should be there. So I put him in a white heifer groomer. I put in a barely legal only because so many guides down there tell me that that's just their confidence fly.
Yeah.
I hardly ever fish it down there. I tend to fish a lot of crayfish down there and a lot of reactionary stuff because it's the opportunity to see a really big fish is there. It's not common like everybody thinks it is.
Right.
I mean, even the... I mean,
and look at the best guide services down there. They're not getting giants.
Two footer is a 2 footer anywhere in the freaking world.
Right.
I don't give a shit. Even though, you know, you see him post up a giant here and there. Nowadays, it's almost always at night, mousing.
Behind feeding tubes.
Yeah. Whatever. It's a. And so I put that. And then I put up Johnny's Kill Whitey, a mini Kill Whitey. Yeah. Because I've seen as many. I'm pretty sure. Not positive. I think Stan Akey's fish was caught on a barely legal. The one that he got was just under 30.
Was that recent?
No, that's the one we talked about in a podcast once where the guy, he got a 29 3/4, but it wasn't 30. But the bet is that if you ever get a 30, you get a Chad or whoever he was fishing with 1,000.
Yeah, he's going to take them big.
He was so glad it wasn't 30. But I also put in, the fourth one was a... crayfish, because the 2 biggest fish I've had on down there, which I didn't land either of them, and they just came unbuttoned on me after ridiculously slow fights. The one fish circled my boat 4 times.
Yeah,
I'm on anchor. Didn't even get my anchor. Just went around it like I can see it. It's just absolutely stupid.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's a big dog.
30 pounds plus. I mean, it's just like, things going around me. I don't know how long it is. It's just looked like a super fat Chinook. I mean, it was.
Were you on an 8-weight?
No, I think I was on a 7-weight because I was jigging a Nancy. I mean, just stopped and I set up. I mean, I don't ever play that. It's a log game. I think that's the dumbest fucking thing on the planet. I set up on it, didn't move, and I didn't think it wasn't a fish. I hate that.
Yo, you're just, Kelly fucking Gallup. People like me think it's ground and log and everything else.
Think that in 20 seconds. Don't think it then and do something stupid like drop. And I sat up on it and it sat there and I could feel something and it just starts swimming. But it never went over 2 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And it swam in circles around my Don Craner, watched me fight that fish the whole time. Who was the best bait guy down there, right?
Is that Jim's dad?
No.
Jim Craner?
I don't know. I don't know if he's got a son.
Oh, Don Craner? Isn't Jim Craner a White River guide? Doesn't he have a shop down there?
I don't know, maybe.
I thought...
Don's the old man.
He's the one that takes
Bill Dance and Johnny Morris whenever they're there. But it's Craner's White River Lodge.
Oh, I thought his name was Jim. Never mind.
I don't know, he might have a kid. Anyway, he watched me fight that fish. It was a great story because he used to hang out with the fly guys.
Yeah.
And he came into Dallas the next day and he goes, what were you doing out there? Because I never tell anybody where I'm going. I go out early and hide.
Yeah.
And try to get, but then I fish where nobody would fish where I was at. I was like a pus hole. right? Just big mud bog is all it is. And he said to me, "What were you doing? Where were we fishing yesterday?" I says, "Upriver." He goes, "I saw you." And he goes, "What were you doing in there?" I says, "Chasing a fish." He goes, "I saw you. Looked like you were chasing her. She was hauling you around or something like that." He's got that accent, right? And he said, he goes, "Did you see her?" And I says, "Yeah." He goes, "You leave her alone." He says, "You ain't going to land her anyway." And he goes, "I've seen that." And he says, "That's where he gets his crayfish." He says, "That's where his crayfish pots are for bait fishing."
Yeah.
And he said, "How big do you think it is?" I said, "You wouldn't believe me if I told you." He goes, and I thought, no, if anybody would, he would. And I says, "I don't know. She's 30 plus pounds, I'd say." He goes, "Yep, that's her. He ain't never going to land her."
Big old girl.
But I've had a few big ones eat on big flies. Johnny had one time on a kill whitey that one was, it ate. He had a fish, I would guess was 7 pounds on, and it ate it. Ugh. And just like a crocodile sideways. Ugh. And pushed it. It was spooky. He's like pushing it sideways, and it just goes down.
She took it down into the depths. Ooh, there's monsters among us.
So you know they're there, but in reality, I mean, you know, Kelly Newman, good buddy of mine, he's down there. He's always posting up. I mean, a 2-footer, still a 2-footer. He hung a giant mouse fly. I saw. That looked like a 30-incher.
Yeah.
Plus, but it's hard telling it's night. But I, you know, down there, I'm just, I like to fish moderately 7-inch flies is what I lean towards.
Top out.
I mean, I used to do bigger, but I never got bigger fish on them. It's that whole, it's got to be a reactionary thing. And when I get a giant on, I've got some pretty big ones on that, but they're generally on earth tones. And my reactionary fish have been very limited, but very memorable.
Yeah.
And so to send somebody down with this idea that just because it's big, I mean, Dally and I got in a giant argument about that one time. I said, "Change that damn fly." And he said, "I'm looking for the one." He says, "Yeah, you think the one's one dumb son of a bitch, right? Because he haven't had a fit eat on it all day." But he's, you know, he's going for that one reactionary. And I don't buy into that theory. They're either on or out. When in doubt, go smaller. And so I didn't give him anything giant. Number four, Johnny's kill whitey, that little gray one's money down there.
Yeah. I mean,
so all colors are
everywhere. My biggest brand of this day is on the all white mini kill whitey.
That's what so I just gave him, I had never fished the Berry League when I got down there. And I think it was Alex or Chad. Both of them. Hey, we're on Armstrong's. We're on the island.
It's Chad Johnson and Alex Slavkis.
Yeah, and they pulled out I think it was Alex. No, I don't remember. Doesn't matter. But he said, "Oh, this is the guide confidence fly."
Yeah.
I said, "I've never fished one down here." So I started, but I didn't get any giant fish on it. But if they're going to play, they're going to play.
Right.
You know, but in the spring, you got, you know, there's all the rainbow spawning. That, you know, whenever you got spawning activity, you got a lot of juveniles around eating eggs and stuff. So that makes for mayhem for the big fish. And then you've got the shad kill.
Yeah.
I mean, if the shad kill happens, I've only witnessed one of those where they were everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
God,
they're eating them.
Frightening.
Yeah.
I mean, if it swam, it got ate. And it was. And I didn't get any giant fish. The day that
it's like being a croissant on the Lido deck on Holland cruise line.
it was pretty spectacular. The day I had, it was, I think I saw less than 30 shad all day.
Yeah.
And I ran it out for almost 7 miles and never all by myself, just one after another. It was like, I just couldn't believe it was happening.
Yeah.
I've read about it. I've only witnessed it twice. But I'm usually there in January and February.
Right.
And that was the very end of February, I think, when I got it.
Yeah, so I think they're going down the day this comes out, so March 11th, 10th?
Well, that's 11th. Spring down there. Yeah. They're full-on spawners right now down there, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Because they open it up. They close it till the end of January, I think. Maybe it's into February a little bit. So the browns can spawn and the rainbows that kind of lit.
Yeah, so I was talking to Aaron about this and what I thought you'd recommend for flies, and I hit on 2 out of 4. Yeah. But he said, realistically, dude, I'm going to be sitting in the back of the boat with a wrap. I said, good. Perfect. Do it.
Just go look at Don Craner's White River Guide Service. Yeah.
And all you'll see is the one with all the photos up?
Yeah.
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 Don Craner, White River Lodge, I think.
That would be your bait and tackle guy.
Yeah.
When you're going to see those giant day fish, it's usually one of the bait guys. Not to say that fly guys get them occasionally. I mean, I know everybody's got one close, you know, in that 30 range down there, but not like the consistency. They do a daily report.
Yeah.
You know, I saw Kelly Newman post up a bunch. I haven't seen Chad's lately. And a lot of those guys don't post up anymore.
Right. Yeah. If you go to,
but Craner's, a 2-footer is still a 2-footer.
Yeah. It's still a big fish.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you go to Craner's website, which is whiterivertroutfishing.net, then go to hit fishing and then go to photo gallery. They post their biggest fish by year and
staggering. And they're all, by the way, all day fish.
It's just brown trout porn. Yeah. They're all during the day.
And he also got
monsters.
He also got a great whitetail section there.
Does he?
Oh, he takes some big bucks. So that was my pick.
All right.
Good question.
Let's wrap this episode up. I think we just crested the hour mark. And you want to do band of the week? We already did some behind the desk.
Steve Winwood.
Oh, I had one for this and I forgot what it was.
I don't
was.
Remember. I just heard a song. I used to work in this bar in Houston. Every night you'd get there, you'd play that song. And I haven't heard it in a bajillion years. Heard it yesterday. In fact, I think I've only heard 2 of his songs.
Really? that's good.
maybe. I mean, in the 70s, he was pretty huge.
I'm going to go with Sticky Fingers. I've been listening to a lot of Sticky Fingers the last week since my Aussie buddy Will was in town. An Aussie surf rock band. Good stuff. All right. We will see you next.
Wasn't that the name of one of the Stones albums?
Yes. Yeah.
That was
a song or an album? Yeah, Sticky Fingers. Album. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. There's one guy said that we hadn't said the Stones yet.
I'm sure I am.
Yeah.
Maybe they listen more than I do. But if not, that'll be my next week.
That was something real quick before we end that was remarkable to me was pretty when sure. One of my good buddies, I'm going to refrain from saying his name until I get the okay on this. By the way, he told me to tell you that your Slick Willie fishes really well with a 6.3 millimeter bead on the front of it.
Beautiful.
He's tight lining it. He's a dirty son of a bitch. he might have a brother that's coming to work with us soon. What was I going to say about him?
Tight line and a Slick Willie.
Yeah, it was before that. Something about...
Reminded me about something.
Sticky band of Fingers, Rolling Stones. Well,
favorite
I don't
Rolling
got
Stone
it.
Song.
I got nothing.
Gimme Shelter.
Yeah.
Lisa Fisher.
Mine.
Best note in history of the world.
I don't know. Angie, Wild Horses. Angie. Might be Angie.
Oh, they're good ones.
It ain't
Lisa Fisher.
I like a lot of slow music. All right. Well, let's wrap it up because I can't remember what I was talking about, but we will get to it next time.
See you next week. Bye. Thanks for watching.